This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, 2020, presented by the Remington Trophy, Episode 11. Dr. Rob Zadiska, you know, if we recorded every time somebody wanted us to record on demand, I think we would be in the studio every single day.
At least about 3 to 5 times a week.
Especially during this past week in which Wisconsin decided, well, they don't want to play Nebraska because they, you know, the COVID outbreak and all this stuff. Now, I think they ended up being red by the time Saturday rolled around.
I would have to double check. I have not actually run the numbers per se, but I believe they were decidedly in a red, which, you know, there was kind of a pretty good article in the World Herald. I'm not sure if it ran yesterday or this morning, where they interviewed Bill Moose talking about it. And it kind of centered a little bit more on Nebraska's desire to find a replacement game, which is kind of that sort of an issue in and of itself. But they talked about the fact that Barry Alvarez took the time to call Moose. And Moose, it was very complimentary of that, just that you don't see that kind of outreach. It's kind of an old school way of doing business to actually pick up a phone and call somebody. But Moose did seem to make it clear that Alvarez's take was, hey, I get it. We're opting out now when it's still orange-red. We're definitely moving in the direction of red, and by the time game day rolls around, it's going to be red. Game's not going to be able to be played. We're trying to just stay a little ahead of it here, in case there are other contingency plans that might be able to be put in place for the weekend.
So over the next hour, maybe longer than an hour, we're going to talk about the cancellation of that game. We're going to talk about the media pushback that came from a national level and even a local level in some areas about Nebraska trying to schedule a non-conference game. We'll move on to the Iowa game with the Hawkeyes getting beat by Northwestern, and then we'll talk about the Big Ten in general. But first, we are drinking a beer today, and we're not drinking Infusion Brewing Company, but we do encourage you, if you're going to drink local beer, make sure to drink Infusion Brewing Company. We are going with the last, and I feel bad because Steve Swanstrom from Centris Federal Credit Union.
I was going to ask, this is more of the Steve stash.
This is more of the Steve stash, which his daughter goes to Marquette, right? And so when he was up in Wisconsin, he brought me back like 2 cases of New Glarus. And the deal was he was going to come over at some time during the season and be here for a podcast. And unfortunately, he can still come over during the season, but there won't be any more New Glarus beer left because this is it. The 2 cases that he brought over are now gone, and we are on the New Glarus
coffee
stout.
Okay, well, how long ago did he bring you the New Glarus?
A couple months ago.
Okay, it took you 2 months to get through a couple of cases of New Glarus?
Well, because I was being prudent, right?
I was trying to save up.
I was rationing. And then before you know it, the rations, with the coffee stout are now over.
All I know is that if there's New Glarus in my neighborhood, I mean, the garage drinking dads would kill 2 cases of that in about a week and a half, I think.
By the way, have you heard from Dave Remington at all? I mean, I know he's got the watch list out and stuff, but Dave's gone like into hiding. I don't want to bother him because I know he's in New York and he's busy. I didn't know if you heard from Dave.
I can't say I have. Although, yeah. I mean, I know he's a little bit active on social media, not hugely. But, I mean, he's been out there. He's been posting some stuff. I think 90% of the stuff he's been doing, it's been all Remington Trophy and some Cystic Fibrosis Foundation stuff. I know they've been as active as they can be on social media just because they can't do any actual live fundraisers because of COVID.
He told me the last live fundraiser the Remington Trophy has had, or the Boomer Esiason Foundation, was actually the Remington Trophy celebration that took place back in January at the Rococo Theater. So since then, they've not really been able to go out and raise monies in person. Now, Scareway Cancer, an organization I'm involved with, we did a virtual event. It just wasn't the same. It's hard to raise money virtually when you're just saying, hey, give us money. You know,
it really is. No, it really is.
That's why I'm kind of jealous of your mustaches for kids, because that's literally just, hey, I'm going to grow a mustache, give us money, and it works.
It was, and we knocked out $750,000. I think actually it might have been just almost $800,000.
Man, that's absolutely crazy.
And we did do it as a virtual fundraiser this year. So,
Scotty from Husker Hounds, I know he's happy they're playing football again.
And oh my God! He had a nice little. He got a little pub in the newspaper.
He's been on television. Yeah. He's been on the newspaper. And that's good because you know, as a retail organization, it's nice to see people still going out there and helping out. Now, I talked to Chad Carr from Ticket Express 2 days ago.
How's Chad doing?
You know what? It's been a tough year. We're recording on Sunday, November 1st. I talked to Chad on Friday night, and you know what? He's got the right attitude, and that is, you know what? There's not much you can do about it. He's got his health. He's got his happiness. He hasn't had to lay off any employees, which is good. Tuesday will be his 28th anniversary in business.
Wow.
Isn't that incredible? 28 years Ticket Express will have been in business.
Well, at some point, the shit's going to end, and he's going to be back up selling tickets again.
Well, you know
what?
I
have faith.
Are you ready for this? He's already selling tickets because if you go to TicketExpress.com and you're looking for a Christmas gift, he is selling Nebraska Cornhusker 2021 football tickets.
Nice.
See?
There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah. Don't forget, they're going to open up in Dublin on August 28th. So if you want to go watch them in Dublin, Chad has your tickets.
And that's Illinois, correct?
Yeah.
I believe it is
Illinois in Dublin. They're going to play Buffalo. Lance Leipold bringing the Buffalo Bulls to Lincoln. I like Lance. I don't know if you know Lance Leipold very much. He was actually Pat Burns' offensive coordinator at UNO. He was an assistant, kind of a operations guy under Bill Callahan at Nebraska. Lance is a good dude.
I remember when he was at Nebraska there for a little bit. Is he? How long has he been at Buffalo?
Oh, shit. This would probably be year four. Year five, because you know he was at Whitewater where he won all those national titles. So there's some good tickets out there. And now with the holidays coming up, go to TicketExpress.com, get your Nebraska Cornhusker tickets for 2021. And if you're looking to downsize your office, you know where Ticket Express is over there on 90th Street?
Yeah,
he owns that whole little.
Oh, that's my hood.
Hood. So if you're looking to downsize your office, maybe go from Class A office space to Class B, and you don't need like. You know, 15,000 square feet now. You only need like 4,000 square feet. Chad's got some office space for you, too. So, you know, it's been tough for everybody. So get out there, support Infusion Brewing Company, support Ticket Express, support Husker Hounds. And, you know, as you get towards the end of the year and you're looking to make those end of the year donations for your tax write-off, don't forget about the Boomer Esiason Foundation and helping out Dave Remington. Now, let's get back to what was a crazy week because you made fun of Wisconsin quite a bit for canceling this game.
You know, I did. I think if you really read the posts that I was putting out there, now I'm always willing to take a jab at another opponent. I mean, I do it with Iowa all the time.
Yes,
that's kind of what makes sports fun is being able to do that. I was upset about the cancellation at the time. Now here's. I kind of had this understanding that, okay, they had X number of cases. They've got the in-real-time testing going on, and so they've got a lock on this is what it sounded like. Okay, these guys tested positive. We got them quarantined. Rest of the team's okay. We're moving forward. And, oh, by the way, we're gonna play, is it Purdue next week that Wisconsin has? So I'm sitting here going, okay, wait, hold on. This doesn't sound like that big of a deal. Now, I get it. I'm not trying to make light of COVID or the fact that it's a very real risks that these guys have. But I'm looking at the situation going, okay, it seems like they kind of got a grip on it, though. They got the guys who've tested positive, guys who've been moved into quarantine, and they're already looking ahead to next week. And I'm sitting here thinking, okay, if it's not that big of a deal, why aren't we just playing this game? Because that's kind of what the message initially seemed to come across as. Now, you get more information, and it comes out that they had many more positives, and they had more positives coming, and they were anticipating an ever-increasing number of positives. Okay, I get it. You're not going to play the game. The main source of my ire on the whole situation, though, is kind of twofold. One, I think the Big Ten did just an absolutely atrocious job of planning this season out in the first place, where they went ahead and said, okay, we're going to go ahead and have a season, but you know what? We are going to half-ass this as much as anybody has half-assed anything in their lives before. And we're going to start late October, and we're going to put all our eggs into this one 8-week-long basket solely with the intent of trying to find any reason we can to not play football. It's you look at the other conferences, and we've discussed this before in the sense that it looked like the Big 12, SEC, ACC, some AAC, some of the other even smaller conferences that have continued to play, Sun Belt, so on and so forth. They were looking for ways to get this done. They were looking for ways to play this season and get out there and have football. The Big Ten the whole time has been the exact opposite. They are always looking for a reason to shut it down, and that's what upset me about this, is that if they had just gone ahead and said, we're just going to play the season, we're going to start in September, we're going to build bye weeks in throughout the entire course of the season, we're only going to play 8 or 9 games. I'm fine with only 8 games. Spread it out and put a bunch of bye weeks in there so when these outbreaks do happen, and they're going to happen. Nobody ever denied that. They were definitely going to have outbreaks. You can quarantine for a week or two and then keep moving forward or maybe make up the games.
So this happened last night, and many of you may or may not know, but I host the Iowa Hawkeye Call-In Show on News Radio 1040 WHO in Des Moines. And, of course, Iowa got beat by Northwestern. We're going to talk about that. But this subject came up because I defended Nebraska a lot last night in the fact of trying to go after a non-conference game.
And also, that was my other bitch and moan, is the fact that I think we should have had that.
And we'll get to that. Also, kind of when the cancellation happened. But this random call came up, and it was in Big Ten in general. How are we seeing, with the way this has been handled by the presidents and chancellors, okay, this is our one opportunity to show you that athletics doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things in the Big Ten. It's more about research money and academics, and by God, we're going to prove it to you now.
It might be. Because the question's been asked of me multiple times. Hey, why doesn't Nebraska just say screw it and bail out? And
even you can't.
And even I'm sitting here going, you don't understand as much money as there is athletically, the TV, the total TV payout for Nebraska last year?
$56 million, I believe it was.
Yeah, it was somewhere in the $50 million range. 56 sounds about right. I don't know if it's 10 times that amount. I know when Nebraska first came into the Big Ten in, 2011,
I believe
okay.
it was.
Okay. At that point in time, for Nebraska to come into the Big Ten, the number that was quoted, and it's obviously grown since then, was roughly about $10 million a year. I think they would have gotten, it was like $4 to $6 million a year television revenue with the agreement they had under the old Big 12. And so that jump, obviously, in athletic money has been huge. But you got the dollars on the academic side have always been factors of 10 higher. I mean, it's amazing how much more money is there academically. And so you can't leave it. So there is a little bit of truth there. I disagree with that premise, though, when you start looking at the local economic impact not having a football season has for maybe not all, but a lot of these teams. You look at a Nebraska, an Iowa. You look at maybe probably not a Northwestern, but a Michigan State, definitely, yes. A Wisconsin, definitely, yes. An Illinois, definitely. An Indiana, most likely. You look at a lot of the teams that play in a smaller community, Penn State, those are teams that are going to be hugely, hugely affected economically by not playing football. And so, you even look at Michigan. God, you got Jim Harbaugh and the football team marching down the street for the season, for God's sakes. I actually didn't think I'd see that happen at that school.
So, and it's interesting, and I saw this somewhere, and if I'm speaking out of my ass, most people who listen to this podcast will let me know when I'm wrong, and that's fine. It's not like Nebraska can just get up and leave the Big Ten. If it does, it would owe the Big Ten so much money. I think I saw the they would have to pay back whatever they get in TV revenue from their next school or from the next conference for 5 or 6 years. They would collect zero TV revenues over the next 5 to to 6 years.
Yeah, they basically cannot leave.
No.
And I've never advocated that. I think most people have. Well, I shouldn't say most people have. And I think there's a lot of Nebraska fans that are like, screw this, let's go to the Big 12. I don't know if the Big 12 wants us.
And I don't know if that would make it better.
No, I really don't. I mean, I think people forget how much we hated the Big 12 when we left the Big 12. I mean, we hated it. And so, that's not an option. I think a lot of it goes back just to the leadership in the Big Ten Conference right now. When you look at the presidents and chancellors, when you look at the league leadership, when you look at Kevin Warren and his staff, there's an incredible lack of overall leadership across the board in the conference.
And see, this is it. If somebody wants to hear it, they can go to kxno.com, look at podcasts, search Morning Rush, and you can hear me on Friday. And I ran a poll, and I didn't make it Nebraska specific. I made it Big Ten specific, and that is, you know, if a game gets postponed or canceled, should a Big Ten team be allowed to hold a non-conference game? 82% of the people said yes. You know, and so that's a huge...
Which, coming out of the state of Iowa, which is funny when you look at how much ire we're drawing from media and fans for wanting to play a damn game.
That's Scott Dochterman. That's John Miller. It's a lot of guys who I don't think... I think media people don't know really what it's like to be a fan. So I threw this scenario out there. Let's say Iowa all of a sudden got canceled against Northwestern this week, and Mark Farley sitting in Cedar Falls going, hey, Northern Iowa could play you right now. We're all negative. We've been practicing. We're ready to play a game. The Missouri Valley Conference schools are allowed to play 3 games in the fall. Missouri State's already done it. And I guarantee most Iowa fans would have been, let's play Northern Iowa. Because people, they were teased, right? You got the first game under your belt. You're ready to go. So Nebraska comes out, and they get criticized by that little pencil neck weasel Paul Feinbaum, Dan Woken, who is apparently woke at the USA Today, Pat Forty, who writes for Sports Illustrated. Did anybody know that Sports Illustrated isn't even around anymore? And these guys are so jealous. They're so jealous that the Clay Travises of the world are in the bar stools of the world are really starting to take over the clicks and the links and the thinking of the everyday fan, that they can't handle it. But the reason Nebraska did what it did is because, and you brought up leadership, and I'm going on my little soapbox here. Starting in July to August, there has been no leadership in the Big Ten Conference, or the decisions that have been made have been questionable at best to a lot of schools. So when there's dissension in the ranks, when there's lack of leadership or the perceived lack of leadership, you will have dissension in the ranks or people speaking out going, well, hold on for a second. I don't agree with this. I don't want to play by these rules because they're stupid and they make zero sense. And that's all Nebraska did, is like, hey, we want to play a game here. Give me good reason why we can't play a game. And if I hear this 125 years of all for one and one for all bullshit, I'm like, wow, that's just total groupthink right there.
It is, and I just, coming from the old Big Eight, I don't understand that. It's this collective group, I mean, it's Animal Farm.
I think it really is.
I phrased it, where it's one of those And the thing that I think makes it so amazing to me is the fact that you got people outside the Big Ten who think the Big Ten is a weird cult, who think the Big Ten botched this whole COVID season, people who completely think who are criticizing the fact that the Big Ten started a season damn near on Thanksgiving. Those same people are critical of Nebraska criticizing the Big Ten. I don't get it.
Do you fall into the thought, belief, or the conspiracy theory that Nebraska fully knew that it was not going to be granted a non-conference game, but did this just in case, like an Ohio State who's going to march towards the national championship, or at least the college football playoff, they look really good. If they had a game canceled and Ryan Day said, hey, we're going to go play a non-conference game.
F you.
It's harder to tell Ohio State no. So Nebraska does this just to lay the groundwork for everybody else. Hey, we're taking the bullet here. We're going to lay it here. But the Big Ten said no to us. So they have to say no to everybody, including Michigan and including Ohio State.
That's an interesting theory. I'm not sure Nebraska did that. I think they did it because it was purely a case of, shit, maybe they'll change their minds and let us have a game. I think it was I see where you're coming from. I think it is a very interesting premise. Maybe they did do that to lay that groundwork, which if they did, it's genius on Nebraska's part.
Yeah.
But even if they did do that, I still think 90% of it was nothing other than the only way this team is going to get better is by playing football, and they wanted to get another game in there.
I mean, at the end of the day, people are mad, and I'm talking about the Paul Feinbaums of the world. I'm talking about, you know, the Dan Wolkens of the world. They're mad at Nebraska for simply wanting to play football. And that's what's weird about this whole thing.
It is, and I'd be, you know, I would also agree that if Nebraska was a 10 or 11 win a year team, if they were a Wisconsin, if they were even an Iowa, if they were an Ohio State, I don't think they'd be receiving even remotely this criticism. Which, I mean, you go back and you look at Ohio State. They've kind of taken Nebraska's stance all along with a lot of these issues.
So is Iowa.
Yeah, and nobody has criticized them.
Because it's Ohio State.
Yeah.
Michigan and Ohio State are like the untouchables in the Big Ten. It's like you're supposed to fall in line behind those two.
But Ohio State's echoing what Nebraska's saying, and people are still criticizing Nebraska.
Because Rob, this is the – you know, it's funny. I remember Dennis Dodd. When he worked for the Kansas City Star, when he always used to, during the mid 90s, that dude, he was rarely with Kansas State and Kansas. He was up here sucking tit off the Huskers, being in that press box all the time. And now he's like Mr. Negative towards Nebraska. And again, I criticize when criticism is due. I you've known me for a long time. A lot of Husker fans hate me because I've criticized Nebraska several times.
That's because you're an Iowa State fan.
No, I'm an Iowa fan. But they've been right here. Going back to when they first descended and said, hey, if you're going to cancel our season, we're still going to go play. Because all they wanted to do was play football. That's all they wanted to do.
And that's been it. Which even the whole... You know, you look at the whole schedule bitch and moan session about Nebraska getting hit with a pretty tough schedule. I get that too, but I was so damn happy just to watch Nebraska play. I was happy to watch us get our ass kicked by Ohio State because we were playing football. I wanted to see Nebraska play. I wanted to see those guys get out there and get a chance to play, develop, and learn this game. And if that means we got to play against Ohio State and Wisconsin and Iowa and Northwestern and Penn State, so be it.
The interesting part was, you know, the excuse is, well, they agreed to a conference-only schedule based on the strict testing protocols that the Big Ten has in place. What, again, where that is flawed thinking is, okay, well, Wisconsin got the COVID, and now Illinois got the Rona a week after they played. So you had these testing measures where you were able to play a game, but it sure appears either one gave it to the other.
You know, that's a possibility.
It's possible, though, right?
It's easy to look at that. Yeah. I mean, let's take that on the high school level. Nebraska played Nebraska, good Lord.
West Side?
Omaha West Side played Creighton Prep in the opening game of the season. The very next week, Creighton Prep had to sit out a week because they had a coronavirus outbreak. Week two, Omaha West Side played Kearney. The very next week, Kearney had to sit out because they had a coronavirus
outbreak.
So did
your son and everybody else have to get tested during that?
No, none of them. Contact tracing actually showed both Kearney and Creighton Prep. It all came from outside sources. Okay. It wasn't sports related. So it's awfully easy to draw that comparison. But after Kearney had to quarantine, the first thought went through my mind was like, holy crap, are all these West Side players a bunch of asymptomatic carriers of coronavirus? We're just going to run through the schedule and infect the entire state. I get that. I actually think it's probably pretty unlikely that Wisconsin gave it to Illinois. I think it was more a case of Wisconsin had it. I think common things being common, when you've looked at contact tracing and testing thus far at all levels, sports, schools, job sites, so I mean inside healthcare facilities, when you look at it within the sports world, 99 times out of 100 it's all coming from non-sports related contacts.
So you're a doctor, and this is, and a lot of people probably think that I'm flippant about COVID, and I'm not. And I just did this on my radio show the other day. I said, here's where I get sick and tired of the people who act like it doesn't exist and you don't have to do anything. But I get sick on the other extreme. It's like the both extremes. Like
there are and then extremes.
Then you have some people like, oh my God, I got it, I'm going to die. No, you're. The odds are you're not.
Yeah, statistically, you're going to be just fine.
So, I mean, I knew somebody who got it, was freaking out, literally thought she was going to die. At the end of the 10 days, goes, well, that's not what I was told was going to happen to me. I was supposed to be deathly ill because she was told that.
Yeah.
And that's not the case.
Yeah, and some people will. I mean,
I get that.
I mean, I had one of, I mean, there's a...
I'm trying to be just use common sense, right? I wear a mask.
There's a good solid middle ground that I think we need to follow, and you can't. Yeah, you don't need to wear your mask while driving in your car. It just now I get it if you just
I see it every day.
Which I mean, there's been one or two times I've walked out and I just forget to take it off because I work in a hospital. I wear a mask hours and hours all day nonstop. So sometimes I do forget it's there, but. Yeah, there absolutely is extremes on both ends. And, you know, kind of going back around to kind of my main argument here about the problem with the Big Ten is the fact that they managed all of this very much by hedging all the way to one extreme and actually really not paying attention to most of the science that they had available to them. So that's my bitch and moan about the way the Big Ten handled this is they didn't take a measured scientific approach to this.
Okay, let's bring up more science, and maybe another possibility the Big Ten changes its mind again. It'll be interesting if it does. But this kind of goes in line with the canceled games and guys testing positive for COVID. A large number of cardiologists have now come out and said, listen, the 21 days is a stupid idea. If you are asymptomatic or mild symptoms and you're an athlete, the chance of any myocarditis are like...
almost nil.
Almost nil. So now that there's new information on the board, do you think the Big Ten reverses course and says, well, maybe you don't need the 21 days?
I don't think they will, unless...
just being stubborn?
Part of it's being stubborn. Part of it's just going back to that same mindset that they've had from the get-go that... they're going to take the stance that no matter what, they are going to do everything in their power to not play. All of this entire season, all of the protocols, everything was set up to allow this to happen. That's why they didn't allow Nebraska to play the non-conference game. That wasn't a, you know what, here's the rules, you agreed to the rules, we're not going to let you play just because mom and dad say so. It was a case of they were sitting there going, if we allow you to play this game, does it technically create a degree of risk? And yes, it absolutely does create a degree of risk. Now, I think that risk is mindlessly small, but technically it does create a risk by having Tennessee Chattanooga come up to Lincoln to play a football game. And so the Big Ten's take on that is going to be, our mindset is if there is any risk, no matter how small, how insignificant, we're going to hedge our bets on that side of it. You don't get to play that game. Same thing on the 21-day rule. I might be wrong, but I'm convinced that even if Ohio State comes out and says, this is bullshit, Justin Fields has it. We do not want him sitting out for 21 days.
Well, can you imagine if Wisconsin right now? You don't want your guy sitting out 21 days. Can you imagine Trevor Lawrence, who's not going to play against Indiana, if he was in the Big Ten and not playing for 3 weeks? Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, right now they're saying he's probably not playing against Notre Dame.
No, he's not. He's out.
Yeah. So it's going to be really interesting for Clemson.
It will be. So it's interesting to get your take on the 21 days. I'm with you.
Yeah, I thought it was a bullshit rule when it first came out. I was sitting there going, okay, how come this isn't 7 to 10 days like it is for me if I'm at work, for instance.
So if you don't follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, make sure to take the time to do so at Doc Talk Sports. Again, that's at Doc Talk Sports. If you have questions for us at any time during the week, you can actually just email us, doctalksports@gmail.com. That's doctalksports@gmail.com. So Nebraska does not get to play Wisconsin. Nebraska does not get to play UT Chattanooga. So Nebraska now goes back into action next Saturday at Northwestern. The Wildcats win by one at Iowa yesterday. They were down 17-0 and then fight their way back using a couple of turnovers and coming up with a 21-20 win over the Hawkeyes. We'll talk about Iowa a little bit later on. Northwestern's different this year, Rob, in the fact that, well, I mean, they ran the ball 60 times yesterday, which was an incredible number. But Peyton Ramsey is a pretty – when Northwestern has a quarterback – that's
you've
the difference.
You've got to watch out. And it doesn't have to be a great quarterback. No. But if they've got a guy who's even halfway capable, they're going to do some damage. And they've always got a solid O-line. Their defense always plays fairly good, solid football. Special teams are always very disciplined. It's just when they do well, they've got a guy at quarterback who's – doesn't have to be an NFL guy, but he's got to be somebody who can at least kind of – do a little bit of damage now and then, which I was surprised. They completely out Iowa'd Iowa in that game.
Yeah, I mean, they ran the ball 60 times. Iowa, if you only count
– a 7-minute time of possession advantage.
And 10 of 19 on third down conversion.
That's huge.
That's a huge number.
That's a little over 50%. That's a nice third down conversion.
And a lot of them were third and long, which will drive any coach crazy. Yeah. Just absolutely nuts. So, I mean, they're not great. I watched the whole game yesterday. They're not great.
Iowa or Northwestern?
Well, Iowa's not. But Northwestern's not great. I think that it's a winnable game for Nebraska.
The thing is, it's hard for me to tell when I look at Nebraska because we've got this incredibly limited sample size to gauge how good they or bad they are.
Let me ask, let's just dive into the Big Ten right now, okay? Because – is it just going to be something different every single week? Let's use the example. Northwestern kicks the shit out of Maryland. I mean, kick the shit out of them. Maryland turns around and beats Minnesota.
Minnesota's looked bad from the get-go.
But then Michigan State goes on the road and beats Michigan.
Sparty, and then, baby.
And Sparty, and you're wearing the Sparty shirt today. Sparty's already a touchdown underdog at Iowa next week.
I know. Well, and they look. Well, Michigan State got beat. Was it Rutgers?
Yes.
Yeah. And that. Yeah.
Noah Vedral.
Yeah. Vedral lit them up. It's hard to tell, and I think you're going to see a lot of these teams that seem unusually disjointed. And what I mean by that is, they're going to look bad one week. They're going to look good the next. They're going to look good one week. They're going to look really bad the next. There's not a lot of consistency here. Again, you get that when you start a football season in late October. It's just you didn't have the normal prep, the normal run-up. I mean, if you even go back to September when the Big 12, the Sun Belt, some of these other leagues started play, I mean, that's part of the reason why you saw – I mean, I'm not trying to take anything away from Arkansas State and Coastal Carolina. I mean, they've got pretty damn good football teams, actually. But that's why you saw teams like that come in and knock off K-State and Iowa State and, Coastal Carolina throttled Kansas. But everybody throttles Kansas. I'm not sure that counts at all. But it's nobody had a normal run-up preparation period going into the season. And so you're going to see that disjointedness. I don't think Michigan State's that much is truly a better team than Michigan. I don't think Rutgers is that much better than Michigan State. I'm not sure Minnesota is remotely as bad as they've looked. Iowa has looked, They're not as bad as they've looked, but again, they just it's not the Iowa. I think people were kind of expecting if this had been a normal season that started at the normal time period.
Yeah, I mean, Iowa's lost two games by a grand total of 5 points. Lost at Purdue, then lost against Northwestern after having a 17-0 lead. Let's go ahead and talk about Iowa because everybody made fun of Iowa. You know, the Nebraska-Iowa rivalry kind of kicked in because Nebraska was supposed to start with the tough portion of the schedule. Iowa was supposed to start with the easy portion and then get tough. Iowa's 0-2, and they just couldn't find a rhythm. I mean, yesterday they scored their 17 points because of two interceptions where they got the ball on the 50-yard line and had great field position.
Yeah, then, I was going to say, you could make the argument that Northwestern spotted Iowa a couple of scores there.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that, and Northwestern's defense was pretty good. How much does it, in Iowa's case, even though you've got what is considered to be a pretty solid offensive lineback, you've got your top seven receivers back, you've got your two top running backs back, but you got a brand-new quarterback, and you take away all of summer conditioning, playing catch, seven on sevens, all that. Does that play a difference with a new quarterback?
Oh, absolutely. But I just made the point. It makes a difference with anybody. That disjointedness I talked about, that's going to affect a team with a new. You get a new signal caller in there, it's huge. What year is Petras?
He's a redshirt sophomore, so technically, but he's going to be a freshman essentially because you get the full year back.
He can be
a 4-year starter.
Yeah, so he's actually a pretty young guy in the scope of things, and it's not like he was out there getting snap after snap behind Stanley the last couple of years.
Well, see, and that's where, to all college coaches, this is what drives me nuts. And Kirk Ferentz did it with Nate Stanley, and he did it with Spencer Petras. And that was when he had leads last year. These guys got rarely any snaps. I think as a college coach,
it's kind of an NFL mentality, and he runs it like that.
You've got to get your backup snaps.
Yeah.
I think you do anyway. I mean, right now Nebraska's sitting pretty good because you got two quarterbacks that have a plethora of snaps.
Yeah, they both know what they're doing. So, I think Nebraska's actually in a pretty good position in that regard. The thing that I guess surprised me is, again, when I sat down and looked at the stat line this morning at from that Iowa-Northwestern game, you already made the point. Northwestern ran the ball 60 times, had a 7-minute time of possession. I called it they basically out-Iowa'd Iowa in that game. I'm surprised Iowa didn't just do that. Hand the ball off to those running backs 60 times and just basically kind of wear down Northwestern's defense. Because I think if Iowa had a 7-minute time of possession, Northwestern crumbles in the fourth quarter, and I think Iowa puts up two more scores at the end of that game.
Now, and look at it this way. Northwestern ran 60 times, only had 143 yards rushing. That's 2.4 yards per carry.
They were oozing down the field.
But Iowa only rushed 23 times total. Two of those were quarterback sneaks for first downs. One more was to a guy I don't even know. And then Spencer Petras had two scrambles. So you had 17 true rushing attempts with your two best backs. So, I mean, what a waste of an opportunity to run the football.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, and you look at the time of possession, Iowa just wasn't on the field that much. And I mean, they had the opportunity to hold on to the ball and burn the clock, and they didn't do it.
So we got a question sent to us at doctalksports@gmail.com. This was after the Ohio State game. So I want to throw this question out there because I think you can do a very good job of explaining it. I think you've done it before, but it's always worth reviewing. And it's Rob or Dr. Rob, what actually constitutes a holding call? I saw a replay of the call against Bo Wilson showing his hand grabbing the jersey while pancaking his opponent to the ground. His arm wasn't extended. While on the face mask penalty, the opponent was clearly grabbing and holding while our player was trying to push him away, and he gets the penalty. After calls, are calls consistent with each reffing crew, or they interpret penalties differently?
Oh, it's hugely different crew to crew. I mean, we would always, when I was in college, there was guys that you kind of had to keep an eye on. I mean, you had, I called them cool refs. You had some cool refs where one time I had a guy who, was it a holding call he had on me? It was either a holding call or a block in the back. And after the play, I did not think it was a hold. I was probably only a redshirt freshman or sophomore at the time, but I kind of complained a little bit to the ref after I got called for the penalty. I think it was a holding call. And the guy took the time to sit there and say, hey, here's what I saw. And if I see that, I and 90% of us are going to throw a flag. If you had done this instead, none of us are throwing a flag. So you got refs out there who are kind of going to be cool about that and kind of explain it to you. You've got refs who are going to call things one way but not another. You've got refs who will... I mean, I saw plays where, I mean, you'll see plays where guys will essentially get tackled by an offensive lineman. And as long as they don't see, I mean, even if they, you kind of got to see the hold itself, I think, to call that. And I'm kind of going back to that Bo Wilson play. I thought that play was just kind of a dirt road ass kicking. I mean, I thought he just kicked the crap out of the guy. Now, are guys actually grabbing each other on every single play? Yes. Doesn't mean it's a hold.
Well,
and so the interpretation is what often happens is when the ref sees a defender actually go down, a lot of times those officials are going to sit there and think, I didn't see a hold, but I'm assuming there was essentially a wrestling takedown that got that guy down. I'm going to call a hold on it. And so you see that happen with a degree of frequency, and that's what happened with Bo Wilson. Other refs are going to look at that and just say, hey, the guy got his ass pancaked, and if I didn't see him actually trying to get away from the offensive lineman and not able to do so, then I'll call a hold. But that's in my book, and kind of what I was always taught by officials that I spoke with was for it to actually be a true hold is you got to see the defensive lineman actively have a chance to escape the block, but is unable to do so because the offensive lineman's holding him.
Right.
If it's a case where you just drive a guy backwards and you plant him on his back and you're grabbing onto his shoulder pads while you're doing it, that's not a hold. You just kicked his ass is all.
So I think you explained this when we were back doing Sports Sound Off, which, God, can you believe that's been 10 years since we did that. It was a case of... You always said it's kind of where your hands are at, right?
Within the frame of the shoulder.
Yeah, so you're going to grab at, let's use the breastbone. I'm using my breast. If you grab right in there and keep your hand, your elbows in.
Almost nobody's going to call a hold on
you. Once you go outside the shoulder or the length of the shoulders, you're going to get called every single time.
It is, which honestly, I see more and more of that where offensive linemen, they'll grab actually almost under the shoulder portion of the pads. And I'm actually kind of surprised you don't see more holding calls when I see that, because in my mind, your hands are way too wide if that's where you're hitting the guy. We were always taught, keep those hands literally like 6-8 inches apart, and you're going to latch onto the front plate of the guy's shoulder pads inside the frame of his actual shoulders, and if you do that, shouldn't be a hold.
All right, I don't mean to get political here, but I'm going to.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Pat Fitzgerald brought it up yesterday. Kirk Ferentz brought it up yesterday. It'd be interesting to see if Scott Frost brings it up this week when it comes to practice. The entire day of Tuesday is off so guys can go vote. How fucking long does it take to vote?
I thought it was kind of interesting. Who was it? I think it was Dabo Swinney made the point. He goes, most of our guys did the mail-in ballots. He goes, we got like 90% of the teams already voted.
But it's throwing a wrench because you're taking a full day of practice on game week.
Yeah, my understanding is what the NC2A did was they mandated you can't have team activities that day.
You can't like lift or anything.
Yeah. So in my mind... I think it's kind of stupid.
Thank you.
I don't know. Maybe I'm going to get raked over the coals for that. Now, I would say you got to give the players an opportunity to go vote.
Absolutely.
You designate a time.
Hell, give them a bus ride. I don't care.
Yeah. Great. So, yeah, actually, supply a bus to a polling location, or what they should have done if they had half a brain. Have everybody apply for the mail-in ballots, and then you can take them to the ballot drop box.
Yep.
You don't even have to mail them in. have a team official deliver them all en masse to a ballot drop box location.
I mean, I get it. I encourage everybody to vote. I haven't voted yet because I like to vote on voting day, and I like to go to the polling place. I
hate it anymore.
I get it, but
the last few elections, I've done the mail-in ballot. It's like this is the greatest thing ever.
But that's your prerogative. I still like going up to the Lutheran church right up the street.
I thought you were Catholic.
Well, yeah, but the polling place is at the Lutheran church. The
Catholic light.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. But it's just fun to walk in, do your civic duty, and leave. I'm not saying you should deny anybody the chance to vote. That's not what I'm saying. I don't know why you got to take a whole day.
Yeah, I don't understand why you had to, and that's where in my mind that's forcing it, where you are forcefully making it.
It's almost political.
A political issue when it doesn't need to be, we're talking about voting as a political issue. Fine, have practice. Do what Osborne did during the summers. Hey. Practice 5:45 this morning.
Exactly.
Guess what? We're done at 7:15. Polling places haven't even opened yet. Go vote now.
That's what I don't get.
Yeah, it's one of those. Yeah, go do it. Super. Go have practice early in the morning before polling places even open. And so by the time they're open, you're like, hey, from the time polling places are open onward, no team activities. I mean, even if they had done that, I would have been like, yeah, okay, fine.
Because I know a lot of teams that practice in the morning. They just like to go before school starts. It's easier for them. Iowa's one of them. Iowa goes in the morning. So now Kirk Ferentz is going, okay, well, I'm usually done by 8 o'clock. Why do I got to take the whole damn day off? And even Pat Fitzgerald was like, you know, it's kind of throwing a wrench in the way we got to do this week because Tuesday is a pretty busy day.
Yeah, all of a sudden what you're going to see is what I'm sure a lot of teams did, had a practice today. I bet teams –
yeah, because they get their 20 – because they still get 20 hours.
Yeah, so teams will practice today, Monday. Tuesday will be the day off. And then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, play the game. So, I suppose you could make the argument. It's like, well, why don't you just practice Sunday and have Tuesday off instead? It's like, okay, yeah, I get it. It's just one of those. It was sort of we're going to try to create the appearance of an issue where there isn't one.
Well, and you know this as well as I do, because you've been around sports and coaches. They're routine guys. They don't like the routine messed up.
Oh, they love routine.
And so, because Sunday's your day off.
It's like the Big Ten. They've got a way. It's the Big Ten way. Don't argue with it.
Yeah, you don't see a coach go, hey, we're going to take Wednesday off this week. Then next week we're going to take Tuesday off. Then we're going to switch to a Thursday. We're just going to do whatever we want here.
Yeah, and then we're installing the West Coast offense on Friday.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way.
We'll do option next week.
We are all creatures of habit, right? I mean, once we get into something that works for us, we tend not to want to break that cycle.
Yeah, and I think this was a case of where the NCAA, they probably made a little bit of it. They made a mountain out of a molehill. I mean, I think they were sitting there going, okay, how do we get around this with the least amount of social justice criticism? And I want people to vote. I am a diehard pro vote guy. I'm one of those. Yeah, I think there was one year where I planned it out poorly at work. Now, like I said, this was over a decade ago. I didn't vote, and it wasn't the big national election. I mean, it was.
And it was like a midterm.
Yeah,
where you missed the city council vote.
Basically, the Metro Community College Board vote, that stuff, which it's important. And I got to be honest, it still kind of bugs me a decade later that I missed that.
Yeah.
So I will do anything I can to make sure I vote, and that's part of the reason why I like doing it by mail. That's just kind of what we started doing as a family. It's like, hey, let's just do it by mail. And that was Jennifer's idea that. We're going to do that, and then it's done, and there's no way we don't vote unless somebody firebombs the polling box like happened somewhere. But Either way, yeah, I totally agree.
So the high school playoffs are going on, and your son is now advanced to the quarterfinals. Is that it? Class
quarterfinals,
A?
Yeah. So what against my alma mater?
No way.
Lincoln East, baby.
Are you going to be torn?
No. Which, you know, I kind of feel bad a little bit because Lincoln East's head coach is John Gingery. John's been there as the head coach since, I think, 91 or 92.
Oh, wow.
He is only the second head football coach that Lincoln East has ever had. You had former Husker Lee Zenick was the coach there.
Would have been your coach?
Yeah, so I played under Lee. Lee was there. I think Lincoln East opened. I mean, they're one of the newer schools. I mean, when you look at Nebraska as a whole, I think Lincoln East opened 67, 68, 69, right around then. And so Lee was the first head coach that Lincoln East had. He was there for probably a little over 20 years, and Gingery's been there since. And Gingery was the sophomore coach when I was a sophomore, and then defensive coordinator on varsity my junior and senior years. And so that was the guy that I've known Gingery for years and years and years. And so I suppose maybe a little bit torn just because you got a guy that's very ingrained with that Lincoln East program and guy that I know pretty well. But on the flip side, I want to see Westside kick the crap
out of them. Are we marching towards a Westside Bellevue West final?
If the teams that quote unquote should win, yes. Now, Westside's got some banged up guys. We've had a handful of injuries. I think in terms of the teams that would give us issues, kind of the big stumbling block on the way there, again, if everybody wins the games they're supposed to win, if we play and beat Lincoln East, the semifinal game is going to be against Millard South, and they've always got a really good team. Huge, huge line, both offense and defensive lines.
Who do they got? They got Prep? Who's Prep got?
Prep has Millard South.
Really?
Yeah.
Will that be a good game or not?
Hard to tell. I think it will be. A lot of teams have started kind of hitting stride here late in the season. Prep's been playing very, very good football the last month here. Bellevue West has Kearney, who was kind of a little bit of a surprise because Kearney came in as sort of a lower seed in the playoffs. I think they actually had a losing record coming into the playoffs. But they had played a very tough schedule the whole year. We played Kearney in Kearney, second game of the year, and I actually always thought they were one of the better teams we played the entire season. But Kearney came into the playoffs, I think, with a 3-4 record, and they've won their first two playoffs games. They upset 6-1 Gretna Friday night, and so they're sitting there across from Bellevue West next week. Elkhorn South plays at Lincoln Southeast. That's a 4-5 matchup from a seeding standpoint. Lincoln Southeast is the number 4 seed. So that'll be another interesting game because you've got a 7-1 team against a 7-0 team.
So your son Ryan plays for Westside, and I'm sure he's getting geared up for wrestling too, because that's going to start almost as soon as football gets over. When do you think about COVID with wrestling?
Yeah, we've already been sitting here wondering, okay, this is going to be really weird once wrestling starts up. Because again, you got so much more contact.
Well, and I'm sure you care if Ryan gets it, but he's 17 years old. He's pretty healthy. It's more you.
Yeah, and that would be the concern. And that's actually, I think, always been one of the big concerns from the athletic side of this is, okay, it's not the athletes we're worried about. It's the athletes giving it to the parents and the grandparents, which we've kind of maintained a fair amount of distance from the grandparents here during the course since school started. And that's had a lot to do with it because I'm not sure how safe that is. The whole wrestling thing, I mean, right now they're planning on moving ahead with it, which, I mean, side note here, I mean, if you want to look at, again, I'm not trying to be overly political, but if you look at the quote-unquote politics of sport, the NSAA is going ahead with all of these sports, the championships.
Yep.
And a lot of that is because otherwise the NSAA doesn't get funding. And so that's how they make their money is by doing these. They came out and announced earlier that they're going to go ahead. They're doing a kind of a restructured state championship format. They might hold as of now, it's still going to be all down at, well, that's the CHI Center.
Yeah.
But they're going to do different classes on different days where normally you'd have...
just the three-day tournament.
Yeah, and it's just rolling with all classes at one time. I mean, if you've ever gone to the state wrestling tournament, it's awesome, but it is a little bit of kind of a controlled chaos. They're doing it now where they're going to knock out, I think it's all of Class A and Class D over, instead of doing, and they're going to spread it out over a three-day span. So they're going to do all of Class A, I'm sorry, 2 days. So all of Class A and all of Class D, I think on a Wednesday and Thursday, and then B and C on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, see, that's where that doesn't make sense. You have, I'm sorry to anybody who sends their kids to a smaller school. A should be on the weekend. A should be the prime slot is Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was hoping for.
I mean, you sit there and go, you're going to do what? You're going to put Class A here? It's interesting. My daughter's going to get really mad at me for saying this because I can't control what my daughter does doing New Orleans. But so last night was Halloween in New Orleans. And so where'd you go? Bourbon Street. I go, oh, super spreader event. She goes, yeah, I'm pretty much convinced nobody thinks there's COVID anymore. She goes, you should have seen Bourbon Street, Dad. I'm like, yeah.
I've gotten the same. I've gotten the same stories. I know my daughter at Florida State where there's been kind of a handful of kind of some parties and get-togethers where she said you'll literally see like 500 people at an outdoor beer garden, everybody all packed in, hanging out.
Yeah, she Mary was just like, I think everybody in New Orleans forgot about COVID yesterday. I go, well, including you, because you decided to go down there.
Well, here's the thing. I get it in terms of the sort of the mental fatigue of dealing with this.
Especially when you're... especially when her fake ID says she's 21 years old.
You know what? That's a Justice family problem.
It's not a problem. I encouraged it. You know, I'm like, hey, do you need the money for that? I'll pay for it for you.
Oh my god! But it's one of those things. I get it. It's tiring to deal with this, and it's awfully easy to just say, F it. I'm just going to go out and do my thing. Although, you look at some of the people who caught COVID following the outbreak up in Sturgis. You saw a bunch of those people are like, oh my God, we were idiots. What were we thinking? Which you're going to, because people have asked me, hey, if the Big Ten was going to allow spectators at football games this year, would you go to Nebraska games? I'm like, I'm not going. I don't want to go hang out with 25,000 people
now. I got really lucky and people are going to be mad at me for saying this. I held an event for 50 people about 3 weeks ago.
You son of a bitch.
Well, so it was my wine tasting. I brought a guy in from Florence, Italy. I mean, I can't cancel it.
Really. Hard to do wine tastings virtually.
Yeah, but you know, I had $10,000 worth of wine up in my garage. I have a guy coming in from Italy. I mean, I'm like, I can't take the hit for that.
I'm just sitting here, I'm going, I brought a guy in from Italy. We're in Italy. Italy.
No, he was actually, he lives in Florence, but he's actually been living in Puerto Rico because it's a long story. But, you know, I had all this wine, but we got lucky because nobody tested positive after.
Well, that's also kind of one of those things where, I mean, right now restaurants and bars are open. Mm-hmm. So you can go out to eat in Omaha.
And I don't think they have to be 6 feet apart, do they? Or maybe they just rechanged that again.
They might have started to. I thought we were still in a full open state. So I think they can be. I think it's a situation where what you did was basically no different than what the guidelines are governing restaurants. So if you want to say you're following guidelines, you're following guidelines. I'm probably going to avoid group get-togethers, but part of it is when we look at it from a number standpoint, the classic where people are getting it right now, weddings, funerals, birthday parties, things of that nature. Bourbon Street, Sturgis. It's large social event gatherings are where people are getting it. I mean, 9 out of 10 cases probably is where you're seeing all of those pop up.
Before we wrap it up, the new college football polls are out. Clemson hangs on to the number one spot, but Alabama gained a lot of votes in the Associated Press poll. Ohio State keeps the number really the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 spots, Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Georgia all stayed the same.
Do you know who's sitting in the pretty seat right there? It's Georgia.
With one loss?
Yeah, because they got their loss to Alabama out of the way. And now it's one of those, if they win out, I think it's going to be hard to keep them out of the top four. Especially
I don't think
when Clemson,
Georgia's that good.
I don't either, but I think if you're going to have the loser, well, if Notre Dame beats Clemson, I think that would be the nightmare situation. Because I think if Notre Dame beats Clemson and then those two teams go on to play out and win, which would they end up in the conference title game together against each other? Could that happen?
Notre Dame?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
But even if that happens and there's another loss in there, I think people are still going to look at Notre Dame and Clemson as two of the top four teams, and then Georgia would get left out.
So in the AP, Wisconsin's at number 10, even though it didn't play. Indiana up to 13. I'm not convinced of that.
I'm not yet, but it's kind of hard to tell because we haven't started playing hardly yet.
Do you think it's, you know, you got Cincinnati at number 6, you got Coastal Carolina at 15, Marshall at 16, SMU at 18, Liberty at number 25.
Well, keep in mind here, too, you don't have an entire Pac-12 conference in there. So all of a sudden, you with the loss of some of these other leagues, you lose a lot of spots. I mean, a lot of those teams are in there only because there's other conferences not playing.
Do you think when this season ends, because of the circumstances, any coaches get fired? I'm being dead serious. Is this a gimme year? Is this a year when nobody gets fired? Basketball, only a handful got – not even a handful. Like, you could count on one hand how many guys got fired.
Yeah, it wasn't much. I don't think so. I think people kind of get a pass for – again, I go back to that disjointedness.
Yeah.
I think Michigan's a better team than – well, shoot. Michigan's like Texas it's like the Mac Brown Texas of the late 90s, early 2000s. Kind of the whole crap tons of talent, just consistently undercoached up there, I think.
It'd be interesting to see what athletic departments may be panicking, going, if we don't make the move now, are we going to lose out on a guy like Luke Fickell at Cincinnati? Are you going to lose out on a guy like Hugh Freeze, who's turned it around at Liberty?
Yeah.
And hell, you could be Luke Fickell and Hugh Freeze going, man, if nobody gets fired this year,
I'm stuck here.
I'm stuck here for another year.
Although I don't know if that's a bad thing for a guy like Fickell. I mean, I think where he's at, I think he's actually in a pretty good position for continued success there at Cincinnati.
But when you're not in the Power Five, money.
No, I get that. I'm just saying, I think he'll still punch out. Say, let's say he stays there. I think he still punches out another 10-win season and is a highly desirable coach for a Power Five position. Then,
you know, the one that surprises me right now is A&M at number 7. I don't know if I'm sold on A&M being
I'm just not sure.
Yeah,
I think their coach is a little sketchy.
Yeah. You got Oregon that's still ranked and hasn't played yet, and who knows when I know the Pac-12 is going to start here in November, but Jesus, seems like forever. That's kind of what college football looks like now, and now Nebraska getting ready to take on Northwestern. Of course, the Wildcats coming off a 1-point win against Iowa over the weekend. Dr. Rob, did we get to everything you wanted to get to?
I think we covered it all.
We covered quite a bit, didn't we?
Yeah, there's going to be more stuff next week. So
make sure to get your 2021 Husker football tickets at TicketExpress.com. And congratulations to Chad Carr and his entire team at Ticket Express, celebrating 28 years in business coming up on Tuesday. That's a hell of an accomplishment, man. It started on the streets of Lincoln, selling concert tickets and Husker tickets, and it's grown into really the go-to for almost everybody who wants tickets to any event, because no event is ever sold out with Ticket Express when those events start back up. Rob, I can't believe you only had one beer. I'm a little disappointed in you, but, you know.
It's post-Halloween.
I know.
I'm trying to get my liver to recover.
Did you have a lot of trick-or-treaters last night?
Not even remotely the number we normally, our neighborhood's insane. I mean, we did the whole social distance trick-or-treating table, big bowl of candy, and we kind of waved from about 20 feet away.
Yeah, I get that. So make sure to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at DocTalkSports, at DocTalkSports. Make sure to send us emails, DocTalkSports@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening to the Husker Doc Talk podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy.